The Human Race is proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
Please be advised this episode deals with miscarriage, infant death, grief, and emotional distress. If you're struggling, please listen with caution, and if you need help, refer to the resources in the show notes.
Welcome back to Emma's story. We took a pause after hearing some of the incredibly challenging doesn't really cut it, the heartbreaking things that she had faced so far on this journey. If you're ready, take a listen to the rest of her story.
So how did you manage to get back on the horse of the fertility journey? Like, that must have been, I know you've talked about the power of positive thinking, but wow, that's a big thing to get your head around, to then go, okay, we are still driving to have living babies.
I mean, some may say that I'm just a very stubborn person.
It's a wonderful quality.
I think so many things that existed before still exist, i.e. you still are a team working for something together. You still want this as your end goal. Well, we both did at that time. We've both got, you know, avenues and access to the things that we can, like the strategies that we can use. I still can afford to see an acupuncture weekly, etc. But you've now got new information as well, and that I'm like, okay, so I can get pregnant. I know that now. I can carry a baby. I know that now. I can even do it with twins. I can do that now. I've got new learnings. I won't push myself in high heat and work and all that. I'll do it differently this time. So I don't know. If you want to and if you can, you do.
Yeah. But then I guess you get your beautiful egg donor, you put that embryo back in or implanted or whatever the technical term is, and it doesn't take. At that point, though, after the immense grief of Ella and Alfie and then yet another setback, does that kind of give you pause that maybe I need a moment?
I felt that one, and that was the last time we tried with a team of people as opposed to just us trying. Mm-hmm. That was the last time. I found that really, really hard because it had taken quite a lot to gear up for that.
Yeah.
And I did think, okay, so yes, it's my eggs that maybe haven't been great quality, but maybe physically I can do this now. And that time was like, well, we had great ingredients from Matthew. We had great ingredients from this wonderful, wonderful woman, Trish. And it was my body who let that next one down. It was my body that didn't do that. And there's so much, there's a touch of hate, self-hatred in there, isn't there? I don't know. So that was hard. That was really, really hard. And after that, I just don't think I had it in me anymore. That was hard. And we said we'd take a little break to kind of refresh our energy and zhuzh ourselves back up again. And I would do some running and, you know, things like that. But it was hard after that. I couldn't get myself back into it after that. And probably a year after that, I, you know, said to Matthew, I don't think I can keep trying anymore. I don't think we can. I think I'm done.
And I think it was actually a Tony Robbins conference that kind of...
You've outed me.
I've outed you. I'm sorry. But I guess they encourage you to unpack, you know... Yeah. Your traumas, and from what I've seen, I think I've watched a Tony Robbins documentary, that maybe there is some powerful stuff that happens there.
Well, credit where credit's due. I received two tickets to a Tony Robbins event as part of something else that I bought. It was like, go to this, you know, 4-day Tony Robbins event. And I said to Matthew, do you want to go? Come along with me. Like, it's 4 days in Sydney. It'll be what it'll be. It's free. We may as well, you know. But it's like, oh, Tony Robbins, how embarrassing. Like, Tony Robbins. But it was phenomenal. It was incredible. And I've done many Tony Robbins courses since then. It was amazing. And yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it's, I mean, I've had really wonderful work with a therapist, like I mentioned, the psychologist. I've had amazing people support me along this way. I've listened to excellent podcasts. I've read all the books, not quite, but maybe it was standing on the shoulders of giants in that moment of, you know, maybe it wasn't Tony Robbins, maybe it was just everything culminating at once. But yeah, things shifted for me in that Tony Robbins course, and I came to terms with the fact that I didn't want to keep trying anymore, that I needed to not. Yeah, so Tony Robbins, yeah, man, unleash the power within.
It's a hard recommend by the sounds of it.
We did firewalking at the end. That was incredible. Yeah. Dub, dub, dub. Yeah.
Yeah, they should pay you a commission.
Now, at this point, your health is taking a little bit of a turn for the worse. Is that correct? And so what happened?
I am very lucky that I have good health. I think genetics, upbringing, privilege, etc. I have good health. But the mind-body connection is a very strong thing, and the combination of years of trying and being incredibly focused on that, there's some PTSD type stuff in there, there's some loss of identity stuff in there, Sorry. There's some very stuck between a rock and a hard place stuff in there, and that I knew that at that point I didn't want to keep trying. But I also knew that my husband would be absolutely devastated at the thought of not continuing to try. It's his biggest life wish to have living children, I think. Maybe not. Forgive me if that's not right, Matthew. Just, it was strong in him. And I wanted to be part of that team with him, and I wanted to give him something that he really, really wanted, but I also knew that I was done. And those, all of that kind of trauma and feeling and it's sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place-ness manifested in my body, manifested in me kind of having these waking seizure-y things, which, maybe we don't go into the detail of this because I won't articulate it properly and accurately from a medical psychological point of view, so I wouldn't want to give anybody the wrong intel, but yeah, they manifested physically.
And I guess at that point, if you're having sort of seizures, they're going to be looking at your brain and considering epilepsy and all of those things. So that was ruled out, that this was very much a physical manifestation of emotional issues?
You know, another moment of strategy tension, I think. for my GP and my psychologist, they seemed to come to that conclusion very swiftly. My inner self felt that that was right, for whatever that's worth. But, you know, my inner self was like, yeah, I can kind of see that. They didn't really explain to me at the time what was happening in order to manifest it, but I sort of was like, yeah, I think this is a mind-body thing.
Yeah.
I think that my husband and others were like, hey, let's just run down all the physical things first of all. Competing strategies from people who love you and who want the best for you and who don't want you to be having seizure-ist type things. And so another tricky spot to navigate, yeah.
And how did you manage to get on top of them, or what happened?
They, through various aspects of things. Tony Robbins helped a lot. My psychologist helped a lot. People helped a lot. They tapered, which was really good. And then when I finally had sort of really came to that realization myself, and with that kind of, I think the lingo these days is that deep knowing within myself that I didn't want to keep trying for more living children. And I expressed that to my husband. And that was awful for him, awful for me, awful experience. Making that decision in myself, they ceased.
Wow. So it was something that you didn't want to have to say, that you really needed to say?
I think so. To myself, say it to myself as much as say it to him. I mean, I don't know. I might be, this might be revisionist history. This might be me reverse engineering a story, but that seems to be the way it happened. Yeah.
And you haven't had any since?
I've had a few since, and there are times where I have to be, I can feel that I'm, that one's sort of coming on, but those, you know, a handful over the last 3 years, and a cluster of them when I sort of realised how devastating that decision was for our family unit. And thought, oh, come on, Emma, gear up. You can do this again. I mean, I'm 48, for goodness sake. I'm not exactly a spring chicken. I'm, you know, I was having perimenopausal symptoms by that stage, but I was like, no, we can do this. We can do this.
You're going back to that mental strength. I just have to be tough. I've got to do it. I can do it.
And, yeah, I had a little cluster then.
Mm. The infertility is such a draining thing on a relationship. And you and Matthew went through such a tough time of it and a horrible situation. Did you kind of just lose each other?
Or do you lose yourself?
Yeah, possibly both. Certainly lost myself. He's an incredibly strong man. I went all in on the team, I think. We both made sacrifices, don't get me wrong, it's not like he was just looking after himself, but just speaking from my point of view, I went all in on the shared goal.
Mm.
And I did lose myself, and I think that's a huge part of what's tough on the relationship as well, because I stopped being me in a lot of ways. I mean, in some ways I was more me than ever, because I think, you know, that stubbornness and strength of driving towards a goal and all that kind of stuff is part of me. So those aspects dialed up. But the rest of me got a bit lost along the way, and that's not good for me, and it's certainly not good for a relationship.
Yeah. Feel free not to answer this if you don't want to, but I know when you go through the IVF process that they make you sign all the forms about what you will do with your embryos in the event that one of you dies or that you separate. And so when you did separate, did you have to make some hard decisions about those remaining embryos?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. We had to make some hard decisions about those embryos at the clinic.
Hmm. Which I guess, there are layers of grief happening here.
Mm.
There's the loss of your babies. There's the donor egg not working either. Your relationship, but then also the loss of the potential.
Mm.
I just keep coming back to how you process that. Do you feel like you have?
Oh, it's still.
Are you healing?
Yes, definitely. Absolutely. And I think the same aspects of my mindset that we've sort of, you know, talked about along the way, like you've got no choice, right? Like I have to look at what's awesome about my life now and the things that I get to do because of the way that that turned out. Like I don't, I can make different choices about how much work I need to do and therefore how much money I need to live on and therefore how much volunteering I can do, or whether or not I don't know, before work in the morning, I just think, oh, actually, I want to go for a walk and a swim in the sea. That's what I'm going to do. There's nobody else that I have to, like, look after and feed and get ready for work and, you know, get ready for school and not get ready for work. He gets himself ready for work. But get ready for school. You know, so there's I think one has to turn to what is good and what can help yourself and humanity. Your community, it's kind of where I just tried to turn. Don't get me wrong, I still have some very sad days and the grief comes up and, you know, swamps me like a wave sometimes. Matthew and I still talk about our children. He has their names tattooed on his arm. We spend their birthday together every year. We've talked about the fact that as our lives move on with other people or, you know, whatever, that's still really important to us. We have two dogs that we share custody over. So they're still very much alive in my mind, the children are. And at the same time, I don't know, I'm healing. Yes, I still live with it. You know, you don't get over it. You just figure out how to live with it and you get better at living with it. It doesn't occupy my waking moments so much all the time.
I don't know if this is kind of how you deal with this, but I know that when we've had close friends or people we even just know that get pregnant, you know, I've kind of have this little jealousy thing kicks in all of a sudden. How do you navigate that when, you know, people around you are finding this joy in having babies?
Yeah. I think I've always been I'm fortunate in that I am fairly, I think, in touch with my feelings. I'm definitely a better adult now and, you know, doing better adulting now than I did back, you know, way back when. But I recognise that I can have a lot of different feelings at once. And so when those things happen, and particularly when it's somebody really close to me and they say that they are pregnant, and maybe it's somebody who's been trying for a long time, and, you know, I am overwhelmed with joy. Like, there's so much joy and happiness. I'm chuffed for them. There's also a fair dose of awe at the miracle of actually being able to pull that off, because it's a miracle. Like, it's
absolutely
just phenomenal. There's also, yeah, but a little bit of resentment, depending on the day, depending on the person, depending on how I'm told. but a little bit of resentment.
Is there a good way to tell someone who has grief over the fertility process that, because I know I've got friends who really tiptoe around me that might have gone on to have their second or their third child in the process, you know, in the time that we've yet to have one. Is there a right way to do it?
No, there's no wrong way either. Like, isn't it lovely that our, you know, friends would know that that's going to be a hard thing for us and would tiptoe around that. I would hate it if they, you know, it's almost if we got wrapped up too much in cotton wool, that's not great for me either. Maybe that's personal, you know, maybe that's part of my own issues. I love that they will say it and they'll include me in that as opposed to sheltering me from it, because, you know, I want to feel loved and you know, connected and part of a group and a team, and I'm so happy for them. But I think it's probably where you tell them and how you tell them and, I don't know, how flippantly you deliver that news. If it was no big deal for you, then that's great for you, but it's a big deal for me to, you know, as in getting pregnant is a big deal for me. It might have been really easy for you, but try not to rub that in my nose.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And we started the segment with this, and people ask it all the time. How do you handle the question when people go, oh, so do you have kids? And it's usually in small talk, right? So sometimes it's people you don't even know very well.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think I do it very gracefully. Let me just put that out there. I'm not saying this is a great answer, but it's true to me. I don't want to pretend. I think it would be very disrespectful of Ella and Alfie to pretend that they didn't exist. So it's important for me to say yes. Yes, but I follow that up really quickly with, but they died young. And I leave it there with a very slammed door usually, because the follow-up question is often, oh, how old were they?
What happened?
Tell me more. And I'm thinking, no, I don't want to. And the follow-up question, I don't know if you've ever had this, like if you've miscarried and people say, how far along are you? Or if you've you know, lost children, you say, how old were they? People don't mean it this way, but it lands on you with judgment for me, and it lands on me with judgment around, well, if it was early in your pregnancy, it's not as sad or as big a deal as if it was later in your pregnancy. If they died the day that they were born, which is, you know, our case, that's not as sad as if they died at four. And I'm I I'm not saying that it is or it isn't. I just don't want anybody to have to make that call, because your grief is your grief. So I shut the door hard on follow-up questions, like really hard, really inelegantly hard. Yeah.
And do people recoil?
Sometimes, yeah. It's a pretty, you know, it's possibly not a very kind thing to do when somebody's just trying to, you know, like make small talk at a line in a buffet or something, and they say that to you. It's possibly not the most polite thing to land that on them.
I think you've earned the right not to have to think about that.
Yeah, well, I've just got to do, I've just got to do what I think is right by them and by Matthew and I and what we've been through, because it mattered to us. So,
Some people think when they start trying for a baby, bam, they'll fall pregnant. But for others, it can take years. They give everything a shot. Surgery, tests, drugs, specialists. Switching up lifestyle choices can help, and this goes for guys too. The journey sperm undertake on their way to fertilize an egg has been likened to a human trying to swim thousands of kilometers. So it's obvious why it's essential to create a healthy environment for sperm production. Menovit is a male fertility supplement specifically formulated to support sperm health and motility. Made with a unique mix of antioxidants, it provides support during the conception journey along with a healthy lifestyle. Menovit is available at leading pharmacies. For more information, head to elevate.co.nz.
Kia ora, Aotearoa, and welcome to The Big Stuff Quiz. I'm your host, Imogen Wells, alongside my assistant, the wonderful Chris Reid.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we'll release a new episode to test your wits with two rounds of 10 questions, one potluck round and another that's very loosely themed.
A bit tangential, even.
Such a good word. If you think you're up for the challenge, go and follow our show on your favourite podcast platform. The Big Stuff Quiz is out now.
The Big Stuff Quiz is proudly brought to you by Melbourne. Every bit different.
Is there anything that you've learned going through your grief that you kind of wish you had have known earlier in the process? Like ways to sort of help heal yourself?
Gosh, I wish I had a good answer for you on that, because I should be able to speak from experience, from a, you know, have some good wisdom. But it's just such a hard thing to go through. And I think everybody is so different and their circumstances are so different. I think one of the things that I felt hard was, of course, my loved ones and the sort of like my psychologist, et cetera, didn't want me to feel like it was all my fault that the children died. But I do, we're never going to know the extent to which me pushing myself or whatever was part of that equation. And I think that it's important, it was important for me that I acknowledge that and put my hand up to some culpability. I mean, other people do like ultra marathons while they're 9.5 months pregnant and still manage to have babies. So, you know, it's not a linear not necessarily causation, but I think there was a time kind of quite early on in that grief where it just felt like I was just having that fight with people who were trying to help me. They would say, wasn't your fault, it was nothing to do with you, and I'd say, it was. And I think the sooner that we got to a point where anybody who was in that conversation with me could recognise that we'll never know, and it's kind of a grey area, and I did what I thought was best at the time. And in hindsight, if we had all the facts, which we don't, I may have been able to make different decisions. But if we'd gotten to, I think it helped me to get to that place where it was a bit more like, I didn't know, and I don't know. And I did the best that I could with what I knew at the time, and who I was at the time, and who Matthew was at the time, and how we were in this together. And I just have to be okay with that. And I think, you know, in hindsight, I wish I'd got to that place and that conversation a lot sooner. Like, it took me probably a good year to start to get to that place. And before then, it was just that it was my fault. It was nothing to do with you, you know, kind of battle. That wasn't a helpful space to be in. Long answer, sorry, to the question.
But I'm so pleased that you have got there. And I can appreciate the tension between other people just want to reassure you, but you don't want to be reassured because you obviously felt very strongly at the time. But I'm pleased that you're where you are now.
Thank you. I am as well. I'm a lot healthier for it, being in that place now.
And I want to talk about where you're at now because one of the reasons we felt like we really wanted to represent stories that just didn't, you know, end tidily with a bow and a baby in the crib is because when you're in it, you don't know that that will be your outcome. And for some people, that is not their outcome. And I suppose what I want reassurance of, if you can provide it, is that there is life on the other side, that there is happiness, there is contentment, there is satisfaction, maybe even peace.
Yes, there is those things. So I'm single now and very happily so. I still have absolute waves of sadness from time to time. There are still things that are hard and that blindside me from time to time. But I am much more myself again after. So it's been about 3 years since, 3.5 years maybe, since I made the decision and said I can't keep trying for living children. And in that time, it was hard for a while, and then I've started to just find myself again, which is nice, and that has been really, really powerful. I make different decisions now. I can do different things. I feel stronger. As I mentioned before, I can make different choices because I'm not having to, time, energy, and money that raising children requires can go elsewhere. So partly they can go into me, partly I can do volunteering within my community, which I love. And, you know, gosh, we need a lot of that. So it's good that some of us have got time and energy and headspace to do that. Money decisions are really different now. So I'm working a lot less so that I can do more volunteering, which is fine and good. I have more that all of that income once I've paid my bill. It's all about me and, you know, smaller set of bills. I'm not, there's no children to feed and school and clothe and entertain. So I can be, can use my money in other ways. But the money decisions are interesting because one of the things that I find myself a little bit worrying about, this is not going to give anybody hope for the future, but like what happens when I get old? Like, I haven't got any children to look after me. Like, who's going to make those decisions and what's going to happen? So look out, nieces and nephews. Burden is all on you. So thinking about money in different ways there. I hang out with great people, some who have children and some who don't. I reflect a little bit on whether I make different decisions this sounds really overstating it, but kind of for humanity. Like, I don't have the Darwin drive to make big decisions around, you know, climate change and who I leave my house to and stuff like that to my offspring, because that's such a, you know, I can think more about what's the best, who's best to leave my house to from a community point of view. So, and again, this is really overstating where I'm at. So just as an example of where that kind of line of thinking can go, you know, I think about land back and returning it to the iwi that I am privileged enough to be standing on that land on, that I'm sure was ripped off them at some point in our country's history. When I'm, you know, I'm, like I say, I'm still pretty selfish. I'm holding on to it for now. But when I'm gone, like, who, like, send it back. Some, you know, like, so things like that I can make different decisions about because I'm not having to think about making sure that my children and their children and their children in that narrow sense of things are okay.
You've got so much generosity of spirit, both in the way that you're thinking and talking to us. I'm sure that this will resonate with people who have experienced this and want to feel seen, and they want their babies to be named and recognised. So, yeah, I guess we want to pay tribute to Ella and Alfie as well. And like the Samoan mothers said, you're a beautiful mama.
Thank you. Thank you.
We always finish with a finish line segment, and we agonised over this a little bit this time because one of the questions is about humour and lightness. And so we're not going to finish with that one. We're going to start it as our finish line question one. And I've checked this with you because I didn't want it to hit the wrong note. But, you know, so much of your story is so intensely heartbreaking. But some of it has no doubt been a bit awkward, or even there's been some humour to be found. Is that the case?
For sure. And I'm, you know, I'm really glad that you, you know, here's an example of let's not alter the question set because of a thing that I went through. You know, it's both lovely to have that instinct, but also it's okay, we're all good. Humour in the moment isn't what I was feeling. And possibly I'm, you know, maybe I'm not a very jovial person anyway, so it's not one of my go-to emotions. I absolutely look back and see the funny side of things. But at the time, it was serious. It was a big deal. I was trying my hardest to reach this goal and do it together, and everything felt quite precarious along the way. So in hindsight, yeah, there were things to laugh about, nothing, you know, nothing worth sharing. But it was, at the time, humour wasn't my go-to. No. Yeah.
I know it's a coping strategy for some, but everyone is different, so that's completely valid. And yeah, things look different in hindsight when you're not in the intensity of the, and the desperation, which is also part of it, right?
Yeah, totally. So question two is one that I love this one as well, because people love to stick their oar in and give advice when you're struggling to conceive. What's the worst person somebody? Well, what's the worst thing somebody said to you, or most unhelpful piece of advice?
Do you know there's one that's jumping out that I'm going to decline to share? Because it was brutal. Yeah. It was after the children died, and that was a brutal piece of a just get over it advice.
You don't even need to tell us to know.
I think, you know, when you're trying for children, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of advice that comes your way. Hey, I think, gosh, it's so dependent on the day and on the situation and who's giving the advice. I think when I scan back through, it's the advice that's given with judgment or flippancy or shoulds. You know, you should do this, you should do that. That is kind of in the category of not helpful, particularly if it's unsolicited, you know, from a stranger. Like, just back off, lady. You know, that was not advice that I was generously receiving. I think unasked for advice is tricky ground, full stop. I think people who are really close to you, it's great. You know, you might need some advice that you're not going to like and that you wouldn't ask for, so that's important. But unsolicited and judgmental and full of shoulds is not. That's not good advice.
So if you're going to offer some advice that's not asked for, just take a pause and think, does this person want what I'm about to offer, or should I just keep my mouth shut?
Not that I ever do that, you know, but I try, but that's certainly the goal.
Yeah. What would you tell someone who is on this journey right now? Maybe something that you wish you had known earlier? Speaking of unsolicited advice, what unsolicited advice have you got for our listeners?
You know, I think I'd say all the best. Wishing you every, you know, well, luck and everything else through the journey. I think probably for me, the things I would for anybody who is open to receiving advice, some things that I wish I'd done differently and known is probably where I'd sit my advice. So remember who you are, and make sure that you hold on to that. I think one way, you know, this really swamps, for me, it swamped my identity, and everything about me was about this and our business, and it was, you know, that was what it was all about. I think for me it would have been useful to remember that one of the reasons why I wanted children, I wanted a family, is for love and connection and, you know, those social connections and love and caring for one another, etc. And I think it would have been useful for me to remember that that's one way to achieve those things. And if I had been able to sort of fill my life with fulfilling that need in other ways, it might not have sucked so much when I didn't, you know, I wouldn't have had so much investment in the fertility journey, because I would have been having those needs met beautifully elsewhere.
Yeah.
If the reason that you're doing it is for, you know, legacy, then find other ways as well, alongside going through this journey, but maybe find other ways to think about the legacy that you might leave and what's important to you. I mean, I don't know, those are just...
No, those are some top awesome things to think about.
Yeah. And we've kind of touched on this last question a little bit already, but it's about how people best help people they know going through infertility.
Mm.
You know, we've talked about just unsolicited advice, but, you know, it is hard for other people when you're watching your friends or your family go through it. Is there a good way to help?
Oh, again, you'd think I'd have a better answer for this, given my more than a decade, but it's hard. I think, I don't know, everyone's so different. I think, you know, listening is always great. Matching their mood is always great. So when I was trying to be optimistic for people to go, oh, hang on, you know, this might not go your way, that was hard for
not
me to handle.
Helpful.
So I think kind of taking your cues from the person's mood and tone, and if they're in a sad moment, be there with them, and if they're in an optimistic moment, be there with them, I think is probably what I'd seek to do now. I don't know if I should ask if that's landing okay with the people around me. I do think that if you are close to the person and you're really worried for them because of some action that they're taking or inaction that they're taking, or like for me, for example, I think people around me could probably see that I was losing myself through this. The people who are really close to you, I think, say something and help them remember who they are and find joy in other areas of their life, and maybe help them to reflect on the stories that they're telling about themselves to themselves, because there's good stories and bad stories, helpful stories and unhelpful stories. And I think for me, I mean, I don't know, but if you're always giving advice, maybe save your, if you're in that position, maybe save your advice or your moments of intervention until you really want it to count, because if you're offering advice and chipping in and stuff all along the way, when you really feel like, okay, I really need to say something now, I think I had more deaf ears to when my family stepped in those moments, because I'd been like, oh, yeah, this is just more of the same of what you've been chattering about. But they'd been gently trying to say some stuff to me, and then they were like, hey, Emma, and it was too late by that stage.
Oh, look, I think that's some brilliant words of wisdom that have been hard won through an intense and life-altering journey. And all I can say is thank you for being so open with us. And if it's all right, I'd like to give you a hug, because I don't know if you're a hugger, but I feel like I'd like to give you one.
Well, yeah, I will happily receive a hug and give one back. I think, you know, thank you. I hope this is useful for somebody. It's I don't feel very wise or very graceful or very enlightened, but and I feel like I've just talked about all the Debbie Downer stuff. Sorry, Debbie's out in the world. All the Downer stuff.
Yeah, Debbie's and Karen's have had a hard time.
But, and it's always a woman's name as well, the Daryl Downers. Daryl's. There is heaps of joy through this process. There is heaps of levity. There is a lot of levity. I'm not, you know, maybe riffing on those ones. There is pain, but there is growth. You know, there is post-traumatic growth. I know that that's a buzzword right now, but it's a thing. I feel stronger and in many ways more fulfilled. In some ways still absolutely reeling from loss and, you know, paths not taken and all that kind of stuff. But there's hope. I live a good life.
Yeah. We're going to hold on to hope.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing a message of hope. It wasn't a Daryl Downer or a Debbie Downer. It was your story. And thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me.
Come here. You've been listening to The Human Race, a podcast from Wabi Sabi Media and Stuff.
Follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or any other podcast app.
And please leave a review. It helps other people discover this important content.
You can also listen at stuff.co.nz/thehumanrace.
We'd also love to hear from you. Email thehumanrace@stuff.co.nz and follow us at facebook.com/thehumanracenz or on Insta @thehumanracenz.
The Human Race was produced by me, Dan Higgins.
And me, Nadine Higgins.
Audio editing and mixing by John Ropeha.
The associate producer was Jen Black.
And executive producer was Chris Reed.
Thanks very much for listening.
That was The Human Race, which was proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
Always read the label, follow the directions for use. Vitamin and mineral supplements are not a substitute for a balanced diet. If you have a baby with a neurotube defect or spina bifida, seek specific medical advice. Bayer New Zealand Limited, Auckland.
If you don't have time to read the in-depth stories or you just prefer to listen instead, The Long Read from Stuff is the podcast for you. Each week we showcase one of our excellent pieces of journalism, telling important or entertaining stories from the world of crime, sport, history, culture and more. You also get to hear from the journalists themselves about how they uncovered the story and how it came to life. So, for your weekly dose of long-form journalism, beautifully read, subscribe to The Long Read from Stuff wherever you get your podcasts.